Welcome to New Human Living Radio Show, bringing you powerful interviews to awaken the power in you. Learn more at newhumanliving.com. And now your host, Les Jensen.
Hello and welcome to the show tonight. Tonight our guest is TJ Woodward, and we're going to be talking about the awakened life. We're going to bring him on in just a few minutes. But I want to take a moment and talk about the idea of self-love. It's a curious topic because self-love can apply to almost anybody in any place on their journey, whether you're barely getting by or you're okay and you've got your bases covered, or you've really accelerated your life, or you're an awakened being and you're playing life large. The curious thing about self-love is that last word there, love. You know, to wrap words around what love is maybe it's a little bit futile in the sense that love always has another idea or another expression. It always is curious for another opportunity to reveal itself. And so when we talk about the idea of self-love, it can be a little elusive about what we're talking about. But I think we can look at some really basic attributes that are common across the whole of the human spectrum, the entire spectrum of human consciousness. And when we look at those fundamental attributes, that helps us integrate self-love into our own thoughts and choices in an everyday way. Love doesn't have to be shown anything. Love in its purest state is unconditional, without condition. So perhaps the story of your past is loaded with train wreck after train wreck. Perhaps you were the instigator of grief and torment to others, or maybe that's how it seems to you. Perhaps your self-critic wants to quantify and hold in judgment some action or behavior in the past that it might seem like needs forgiveness. But, you know, sometimes the ego won't even allow the forgiveness, and it's almost like I've created this tragedy, therefore I must suffer. And, you know, love doesn't have a watch on. Love doesn't have a concern about any kind of temporal pacing. Our relationship with love is our relationship with ourselves. That idea of forgiveness, that idea of compassion is available as a power tool to improve our own sense of self-love. Love is always willing for another chapter. Love is always willing for another chance. In fact, I would suggest that every single soul, that would be you, that would be me, will end up back in love with who we are. I suggest love is at the core of our being, and as a fundamental truth of who we are, it cannot be touched by mortal man. So it doesn't matter what other people think of your past. It doesn't matter if your ego won't let go of judgment. There's no condition the human mind can hold you in that can taint or tarnish the absolute, pure, unconditional love that awaits your own acceptance of it. You know, a lot of times, even our own thoughts don't serve us. The thoughts that we have in a habitual way, day in and day out, really don't service. And the idea of guilt says, well, I'm guilty. I'm guilty. I'm not innocent, therefore I'm not deserving because I'm guilty. What do we do with guilty people? We take away from their life. So if we have a sense of guilt about some aspect of our past, it's only in our own noggin. It's only in our own sense of self that we can surrender to a sense of dominion over who we think we are. In other words, love itself doesn't have a condition for us to understand it, to experience it, to live it. Any condition is a self-inflicted wound, if you will. And the moment we let go of that, love is there right that moment, awaiting an opportunity to express in us, through us, as us. So to be cognitive of the idea, the notion that there's this infinite well of unconditional love in us now, well, what would that look like? How would our lives change day in and day out if we were to be able to embody more and more of this expansive, infinite field of unconditional love? Love says we show up for ourselves. You decide to listen to this episode tonight. That's showing up for yourself. We're going to have conversation tonight about honoring who you are as a person. To take that to heart is an act of self-love. When you have mental and emotional reactions to thoughts, feelings, and memories of your past, love can soothe those and heal those and release those, no matter what your past is. The idea that every single one of us is the Creator incarnate. The Father and I are one now. The kingdom of heaven is within us now. The only time you're ever going to experience heaven on earth is now, today. And the doorway to heaven on earth is unconditional love. Well, how come I'm not talking about love of others here? Well, certainly we could talk about that. But I suggest you, a byproduct of loving yourself is loving others. When you look at the actions of your past and you learn how to forgive yourself and have compassion for yourself, you automatically have more aptitude to doing that for others, no matter who they are. I suggest you, self-love can be the vehicle of love expressing in a more vibrant and expansive way, not only in your own life, but through sharing that self-love that you embody with others just by being you in their presence. Love's a curious thing. I suggest you take time to contemplate it. Take time to contemplate what genuine love for yourself would look like and how your life could change for the better over and over and over again. Well, tonight our guest is TJ Woodward, and his latest book, Conscious Being, Awakening to Your True Nature, is both inspiring and enlightening. It's a compelling resource for those seeking self-realization. It can serve you as a guide for awakened living, which is a state of higher clarity and presence, and a more natural condition than many are aware existed within each one of us. Join me in welcoming TJ to the show. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Les, so much. I want to start by saying how beautiful your opening was. I just feel so honored to be a guest on your show this evening.
The pleasure is all mine, I promise.
So, thank you.
So you've written a book, Conscious Being. That at what point in your life did you see yourself an author?
Well, you know, in your opening, what really struck me is my own journey and my own journey of self-forgiveness and self-love, really, which led to my knowing that I needed to write this book, Conscious Being. It was really in my own dark night of the soul experience where I came to a place of surrender and recognizing at a very deep level that love is who I am, love is who we are, and that what prevents me from experiencing and expressing that are all these ideas I have collected around that. And when I got through, when I was able to walk through that dark period and emerge in a profound new way, which was what I call awakened living now, which is this heightened state of clarity, I knew that I had to, I knew it was my calling to the best of my ability, put into words how I walked through that and how we awaken to our true nature. So I felt at that point that it was really something that I had to do. And that was 10 years ago. And it took me about 8 years to actually get from that experience to actually manifesting the book.
Right. So did you see yourself an author your entire life, or is this something that revealed itself in a more pronounced way as you learned to love yourself more and more?
Well, that's a great question, Les. I actually did not see myself as an author. I had early experiences in my life where I had the inner knowing that I was going to be a spiritual teacher of some sort. And the reason I paused before I said that is because I don't really know that it's a teacher, I have a message, I think, through my own experience that I knew I had to share. And I've had that knowing off and on for 20 years. The form of it actually taken in a book was actually something quite new for me. The book itself has 12 chapters, and when I had the idea to write a book, I thought that I was going to sit down and write it, and it just didn't happen that way for me. So what I did is I actually took 12 different talks that I had, and I had the audio recordings, and that became the skeleton, if you will, for the book. And we transposed that into written word, and then I had someone help me actually write the book and bring it into, into manifestation. So I guess my that was a long answer, but I guess I really never did see myself as an author, but I knew that I had a profound calling to share my own spiritual experience. And it wasn't until maybe 3 years ago that I even imagined that would be in the form of writing a book.
So in the process of writing this book, you're taking your intention, and you've got these 12 talks that you've integrated as chapters. As you spent time honing the message that you had to share with this book, did you find your relationship with yourself changing as the book evolved?
Oh, without a doubt. And I would say that in the saying yes to the calling originally, because it was in around 2004 or 2005 that I had this inner calling and this inner knowing that I wanted to go into the ministry or into spiritual teaching. And I actually said no to that for quite some time. And when I said yes to that, actually it caused a whole series of things to happen in the outer realm that started with my life kind of crumbling, honestly, Les, and it was because I had really built it on a shaky foundation. So that's kind of just a little bit of background that I think we could talk more about, but in the process of writing the book, I would say your topic of self-love is such an important piece, because what came up for me, honestly, as I began to write the book was a lot of self-doubt that I had to really work with and be with and welcome to the table. And recognize that it had to come from a place of deep purpose for me. Actually, one of the chapters in the book is called Living on Purpose, and that to me, that purpose, that knowing that I had a message that I wanted to share, had to be much more important than what I thought of myself.
Wow, you know, just to listen to you share the path, the journey that you took to write this book, I can just feel the how it touched you. So when we talk about conscious being, where did you come up with that title?
You know, one of my favorite quotes is a quote from Eckhart Tolle from his book A New Earth, and it simply says, he said, conscious being leads to conscious doing. And that resonated with me the first moment I read it, and it just kind of always was there with me, because I had spent the first half of my life being a doer with very little consciousness around it. So I, you know, quickly, you know, because Les, I actually early in my life felt broken, that there was something wrong with me. And so what I thought the solution to that was to create in the outer realm in a way that would help me to not feel that anymore. So there was not a lot of consciousness around my doing, and that's really why my whole world collapsed. And what emerged from that is a recognition that conscious being must be the first order of things, and it could be called conscious loving as well.
Well, so say I'm a listener and I'm listening to this, and you're talking about consciousness, and I could say, well, I'm conscious. Here I am in a room, I'm conscious of that. There's outside. I could order a pizza. I mean, what am I missing here? How can there be more to consciousness than what I'm experiencing now?
Wow, that's such a great question. I actually have a chapter in my book called Conscious Evolution. I've given it a framework, and I guess I can speak about consciousness because that's an obvious question when the word is in the title. So I get asked this often. When it comes to consciousness, there's at least a couple of different types of consciousness. There's ultimate consciousness, right? There's that changeless, eternal truth that we are, that we could call love, or we could call light or source, or some might call God, that we know we're all one with on some level. That is the ultimate changeless consciousness. The consciousness that I write about in the book is about my human consciousness, or my ability to perceive. And I've given it some different framework of how we evolve in our expansion, or our ability to have more awareness, more presence, and more clarity in our life. So I was really running my life very unconsciously, meaning that I didn't recognize that my beliefs and my attitudes and my view of the world were really running the show, my collection of stories. And as you so beautifully said in the opening of the show, those things I had done that I just wasn't able to let go of. I was carrying so much guilt and shame that was running my show, rather than being able to expand my awareness, because really this is about awakening to the truth of who we are, our true nature.
So if there's a deeper truth, I think is what you're suggesting, there's a deeper truth to who we are, we have to unravel perhaps our past. I mean, how do you go about in experiencing a shift in consciousness so you can get an idea of how the view of your life might change as you do that?
Well, I think it starts with a decision, you know, because the thing about being unconscious is I had no idea that I was, you know, we're talking about an awakened life. I had no idea I was walking around asleep. And what I mean by asleep is that I had no idea that I was perceiving the world, or I was experiencing reality based on my perception. And my perceptions were informed by the beliefs that I had, the ideas I had, the collection of thoughts or stories. We could call that ego or personality self. Eckhart Tolle calls it the little me versus the large expansive me, or consciousness itself. And the way we, like you said, absolutely, the way that we expand into a greater awareness of consciousness is by dismantling, addressing, and questioning all those the lens through which we see the world. And that is what creates what we call reality. So as we raise our awareness and expand to really being in touch with our essential nature, which is love, then we can really just break free or bust loose of the egoic way of being in the world.
So busting free of the ego, what would you say is the ego, and how does that relate to the role of the mind?
Great question. And I, to me, I use those pretty synonymously, meaning that the ego, because see, early in spiritual teaching, I believed the goal was to get rid of the ego. And classically, of course, when we think of ego, we think of someone that is very self-centered, or they're running their life, you know, and very trying to dominate. And although that's one aspect of the ego, a much simpler way to say it is my thoughts. And when I believe that I am my thoughts and my perceptions, and I call that reality, that is living an egoic life. So it may not look at all like that I'm feeling very inflated. It may look the opposite. I may have a collection of stories that I'm not good enough or I'm not worthy. I work in the field of addiction recovery, and what I notice when a lot of people come into treatment, their ego or their collection of stories is actually that I'm not worthy, I'm not good enough. And so having an ego-based life is believing those stories. So we could say a spiritual awakening or an evolution of consciousness is the ability to live beyond the story or beyond those collection of thoughts.
Would you say that, I mean, if you're walking in the arena of human addiction, would you say that the ego tends to have some form of attachment or addiction, if you will, to a story of the past, and that's what leads to an addictive behavior?
I think it certainly can. The way that, in its most simplistic form, I frame addiction as seeking some outer solution to some inner malady, meaning that somewhere early in life, I separated from, you know, and this is why the subtitle of the book is Awakening to Your True Nature, because I believe we come into the world whole and perfect and really knowing our essential nature. And if you look at a small child, usually under the age of 2 or 3, we see that perfection, we see that presence, we see that clarity, and then we begin to forget. And addiction comes in when we find something outside of ourselves to help us with that feeling of separation. So it's an attempt to return to wholeness, but it doesn't work because it's something outside of ourselves, and we believe that it's that thing that's bringing us pleasure that is going to keep, you know, bringing that sense of pleasure. And of course, then it becomes an addiction because it doesn't work in the way that it once did. So it could be said that that addiction is really more of a solution to a spiritual or really a spiritual malady that's happening.
So to move more into a congruent or a more conscious way of living, and as we've talked about consciousness, how would this awakened living look like in our everyday life? What would be different about us as we awaken to our the way we live?
Yeah, I would say primarily less attachment to outcome, more presence, more peace, feeling more connected to myself, the ability to be more authentic and vulnerable in my life and my communications, the ability to connect and open up to more love and more compassion for the world. You know, to me, the unawakened life is really all about control, being trapped in my mind, believing there's an outer solution. So an awakened life is really recognizing a very deep connection or a oneness with our essential nature, which is love. So simply put, we experience more love and joy in our life.
So you were sharing attributes of our life. How would you convey that as far as how you feel about your life?
Well, how I would feel about my life, well, I guess I would say more calm. What I notice about as I have awakened is that I am far less focused on externals and far more interested on my own clarity, calm, and peace and presence. So it may sound a little intangible because, you know, I honestly wanted spirituality to be much more about peak experiences. So I thought I could meditate a certain way or pray a certain way or find just the right workshop and that I would always feel elated. And I come to find out that, you know, this isn't so much about that as it is about having more clarity and being able to be the observer of my life. So when we talk about the mind or the ego, it's not that my mind stops thinking, because that would be like asking the heart to stop pumping blood, but it's that I no longer believe I am my collection of thoughts, so I can actually witness those. So the awakened state is about being a witness to that. So how it feels is far more peaceful, far more connected, and calm.
Well, I heard you say clarity, calm, and peace. And I have to tell you, when I look on social media or the media overall, calm, clarity, and peace just don't register on the Richter scale.
That's right.
I mean, I don't want to skip over that in a lighthearted way because that's very powerful. I mean, because calm and peace, I think, by their nature, would greatly reduce or eliminate stress. And stress is such a vehicle of dis-ease to the body. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are very powerful concepts.
Well, thank you for taking it to that level. You know, we live primarily, and this is in direct relationship to the way I talk about the four levels of human consciousness in my book. Level one, which is still where most of the planet lives, I call it the martyr level. We could call it victim. That's where we believe the world is happening to us. We believe that the problem is outside, and so is the solution. And when you talk about social media and the news, I mean, it feeds that. So you could say that, you know, the purpose, and of course it's unintentional or unconscious, but the purpose of this is to feed and to intensify and to concretize the ego so that we have this firm belief that something outside me needs to change in order for me to have peace. If you look at that, you know, I love that you talked about disease, and I'd love to come back to that, but if you look at, like, the way that nations are at war, and we believe that the negotiations have to be external, if everyone on the planet evolved their own inner consciousness, if we all did our own inner work, peace is a natural out-picturing of that, because peace has to begin with me always. It actually begins and ends with me. So each of us are responsible for our own evolution, and I feel and know that that's what's wanted and needed on the planet right now.
You know, from my perspective, peace by its very nature has to be chosen. It can't be forced. Peace isn't something that you inflict or on another. It's something that is discovered within you. And when you choose to recognize it for what it is and then be able to embody it, that's the doorway of peace on the planet. It has to happen inside of us. It's not something that's given to us, and it certainly can't be forced. You can't force somebody into peace.
Exactly. And you know, recognizing that peace is who we are. You know, recognizing, and that's where we get into the conversation of our true nature. And, you know, I appreciate this conversation about our true nature, and people will often ask me what I mean by that. And I recognize, just as you said, that we embody this peace from the inside out, right? So when I recognize that gets cultivated from within, it actually becomes far less important what's happening externally. And then the greatest paradox, of course, as you know, Les, is the more I experience and recognize that I am peace and I am love, the more I'm able to bring that out into my world, my small world, meaning, you know, the world that I actually have influence on, and then the more that I seem to receive. And that is when we talk about conscious evolution or raising consciousness, this is what we're talking about. So simply said, it could be that I'm going to choose peace. I'm going to choose love. And I'm going to choose to recognize that's who I am. Now, I write some in the book about what are the tools and the ways that we can do that. And that's a whole other conversation that I love to be in as well.
Well, what you're talking about here, from my perspective, this is really powerful stuff because I like the idea of heaven on earth. I like to conjure up ideas, visions, paradigms of what it would look like if all of us were able to embody a sense of peace, a sense of self-love, and a sense of unconditional love for others. So when you talk about our true nature, would you say that's the doorway to creating a sense of peace on earth, heaven on earth?
Absolutely. And it must, you know, for me, the way I frame it for myself is it must start with me, and it always is about me. In other words, we have this idea, you know, when we conjure up a vision of heaven on earth, most of us begin to start thinking what that would look like, right? Like what it might feel like. And we can picture that in our outer realm. And yet, when we make the decision that we are going to do this work from the inside out, and I am able to align with my true nature, and another way to say that is let go of all of those things that stand in my way of experiencing that, what happens is the outer realm actually doesn't change, but it becomes heaven. It's the greatest paradox. It's all around us. You know, we are actually living in that when I choose to see it.
You know, Rumi, the 13th century poet, talks about when the profane becomes sacred again. And I think it's what you just commented on, being able to see what was already there to begin with, to be able to see that that glimpse of heaven in the moment as a natural part of our being.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I believe it's Einstein that said there's two ways to view the world, and that is nothing's a miracle or everything's a miracle. And I may have that slightly off, that quote, but to me, when I recognize that everything is this miracle, I'm no longer seeking them because I can embody that for myself.
So to take a step to the side and look at human history over a span of generations, what would you say the end game of consciousness is in our human nature? Where are we going with this?
Well, that's, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with spiral dynamics, which is a study of the evolution of consciousness, both individually and collectively. It looks at the ways that we have expanded and we are expanding and evolving. So consciousness itself clearly is evolving, and yet we can find evidence to support that it's not as well. So it seems to be, you know, one way to say that, say this is the consciousness of my belief will come to me, or my experience, or my own awareness. So when I make a decision to see it, it's there. So when we look at human history, we can imagine a time very early, you know, in human evolution when we really, our very lives were at stake. Walking out of a cave, we might get eaten. So we had to build this ego to protect ourselves. So the ego was formed so that we could be protected from danger. But most of us today, and I know that it's not, unfortunately, it's not true everywhere on the planet, but most of us today are not threatened in that way, but we've built this ego system that still believes we're being threatened in that way. And so what seems to be happening now, it seems like we're going through a quantum leap in consciousness and this new paradigm is that more and more of us are recognizing that the work is our own to do. It doesn't mean that we don't do work in the outer realm, but primarily the shift that's happening is happening in consciousness, that we recognize that we are here to live as awakened beings.
When I hear people talk, oftentimes they'll say, well, of course it's going to screw up, or, you know, it always goes wrong. And it's almost like they're anticipating a sense of ongoing failure or ongoing threat. And that defensive mechanism you talked about, where we build up a framework to survive that, can get instilled in us and be running subconsciously underneath us. But I really like what you said about we're getting to the point of getting past that. It's almost like humanity's hitting puberty now, and we're kind of working our way through that into a more responsible perspective.
Absolutely. And I love the way you frame that, because, you know, another way to say that is we're trying some new strategies simply because the others didn't work. So, you know, when we live in this paradigm, this what I call the marginal level of consciousness, where I believe in separation, I believe that my life is threatened, I believe that I have to protect myself, or I have to compete, or I have to prove, all of those dynamics that are associated with ego, we recognize now that it just doesn't work. And I feel like that is the surrender, if you will, that humanity is embarking upon. And that is, just like if you look at, you know, in our own life, sometimes it has to get really painful before we're willing to let go of that strategy, you know, sure, that kept us small. And I feel like that's happening right now on a global scale.
So would you say then, if we were to discover and then be able to actually embody and live our true nature, we wouldn't have anything to prove to anyone? That there wouldn't be that stature of competitiveness or stature of I've got to defend myself or whatever? And what do you think about that?
I am saying that, absolutely. Marianne Williamson says it beautifully. She says, love is what we're born with, fear is what we learn. And I know she's not the first to say that. So if it's true that we are born loving and connected, and, you know, if you look at a small child, they don't have the prejudices that adults do, because they haven't been taught that yet. So it's not about trying to attain a state of being or an enlightened state. It's about removing all those lies, really, that were taught to us. And competition is a big part of that. You know, we're taught that there's a limited supply, and that if you get more than I do, then I'm not going to get enough. And so we live in a competitive world, and that's taught to us from such a very, very early age. And I don't think that is our essential nature. I believe that it is love, and that's how we're born. So if we were taught something different, imagine how the planet would be now, how humanity would be.
So if we grow up looking through the lens of that's being modeled for us, the competitive nature, the perhaps the dog-eat-dog mindset, I've got to be aggressive to establish my own, how do we go about changing that lens through which we view the world through?
Well, I think it happens in this moment, and it happens from within. So when we get into this conversation, it generally, what we start to talk about is, how do we change this in the world? And the simple answer is, we change this within each of us. So what I invite myself to do when I feel a sense of competition, I invite myself to actually question that and to begin to recognize where the strategy of competition came into my life, the reason it was taught to me, that it was a distortion of the truth, because the truth is that we're all whole and perfect, and remembering that. So it's always about the great remembering, returning to that. And what that involves, Les, is actually a lot of inner work. You know, that's been my experience, to not battle the ego, because that's more ego, right? Only the ego would want ego to die, as has been said. So this is about having a gentle relationship with that, treating that with compassion. And another way to say that is, if I'm not happy with the way my world works, what needs to change in me? What needs to change in me, or what needs to be let go of, so I can return to that clear lens to see the world in its perfection?
That clear lens. I like what you said about I am perfect and I am whole. I can imagine that if I'm really not happy with my past and I've got a good dose of guilt and shame going on, I might not feel as perfect and whole as you suggest. How is it that we are perfect and whole even though we experience suffering and self-doubt?
Absolutely. Well, that's the process, right? That might be why we call it a spiritual practice. One of the points I guess I would make, or a tool that has been really useful to me, is to watch my language, you know, to look at those words that support a more egoic way of being, and releasing those from my vocabulary. And for myself, I've chosen 6 words to not use anymore. And when I notice that I use them, I recognize that that keeps me limited or keeps me stuck in a paradigm of separation. And so right and wrong and good and bad are 4 of my words that I've chosen to let go of. So what you're saying is, if I experience myself other than whole and perfect, it is generally because I feel that I have done something that has been good, that has been bad, right? So I need to get good. And that whole process keeps us stuck in a cycle of separation. So moving beyond right and wrong and good and bad, and recognizing that we are essentially whole and perfect, and how that plays out in the real world is really me reframing. So a way to say this would be, you know, we can look back on a devastating experience in our life and recognize that through that experience, there was actually some great benefit. So what we thought was bad actually wasn't so bad. When it comes to the harm I've done others, in my own experience, I certainly had a period of my life where I harmed others based on the way I was living my life. I've had to come to terms with the ultimate acceptance and self-forgiveness for those acts. And I can talk, if you'd like, a little bit about how we do that.
Sure.
I think starting with a decision, you know, starting with a decision that the act itself came from a distortion of knowing my true nature. In other words, if I knew that I was wholeness and perfection and that I was love and that I was light, I would have never done that anyway. So all of the behavior came from me having a sense of separation. So ultimate forgiveness for me is recognizing that I just didn't know who I was. And I believe, you know, that's the biblical line that, you know, Jesus said, "Forgive them, for they know not what they've done." I would say, "Forgive them, for they know not who they are."
And well, so I like when that.
Thank you. And when I can apply that to myself, I didn't know who I was. And so if I believe that I'm broken, I'm going to act that way. Hurt people hurt people.
Right. Beautiful. I like that. Well, so do you see this path as discovering your spirituality, or would you say it's a religion? Or, I mean, how would you contextualize that?
Well, I think when it comes to spirituality and religion, it can be a really individual path. I think what we're talking about is the evolution of consciousness, which for some might include religion or might not. I certainly wouldn't say it is a religion. I actually, in that chapter, when I talk about conscious evolution, I also write about the God idea and how, from the different levels of consciousness, we've created the idea of a God. So at the martyr level, we believe there's a God out there somewhere, might be a punishing God, might even be a rewarding God, but someone that we must surrender to, because remember, in that level of consciousness, we're a victim of our environment, and the problem is outside of me, and so is the solution. So as we evolve, God becomes more and more of an inner experience, and then ultimately we discover that's who we are. And how that plays out in your question of whether or not this is religious, it would depend on what we mean by religion. But for me, it's not a religious process.
Sure. Well, if we're perfect and whole, then all paths lead to the truth. I mean, if we can't shake our truth, there's no choice we can make that disqualifies us, if you will. We're all in the end game here of discovering, not creating, but discovering that inherent truth of who we've always been underneath it all.
Absolutely. Well said, Les.
Well, you've gone through quite a journey here, and it's quite evident in your language and how you've been sharing, and it looks like you've created some platforms for people online, and I believe you also have some resources in the San Francisco area?
Yes, absolutely. I work with clients individually as an awakening coach, and people will, of course, often ask me what that means. And what that means is I support people in their own evolution in their consciousness. So for those people who have either come through the dark night of the soul, or they're in the dark night of the soul, or they recognize there's a reality far greater than what they believed was reality, and they're beginning to have these experiences maybe of disorientation from the world they live in, and they want to cultivate more clarity, awareness, and presence. I work with clients individually to walk them through, because certainly you and I touched on some of the ways we can get in touch with and return to our essential in nature, but there are some tangible processes that I work with clients individually. I do that in San Francisco and also FaceTime and Skype with clients worldwide. I also have a spiritual community in San Francisco called Awakened Living. We meet on Sunday mornings at the chapel at Fort Mason. We also have a Monday evening event. We're really looking to expand, and we see ourselves as a center for conscious awareness or conscious evolution. And then also, I also, of course, have my book, Conscious Being, and then I have Awakened Living Television, and that is a show where I interview really people from all different walks of life that are doing spiritual work of some sort. And all of those episodes, I think I have 70 episodes now, all those can be found on YouTube.
Well, very nice. So who would you say your ideal client is? I mean, who are they?
You know, I think I work with a few different distinct groups of people. The first group I would say that resonates for me when you ask that question is someone that has reached a level of success in their life. Maybe that, you know, their outer world looks perfect to everyone, and there's a yearning within them for something more. Maybe they've built their life thinking that they need to be the good wife or the good husband or the good partner or the good parent, and there's something that's lacking in terms of a depth of experience. They're not experiencing that clarity. They do feel that the external world is kind of bouncing them around, and they're not able to stay centered, and there's a yearning for something more. They begin to have an experience that there's something greater than what they've always called reality, but they have no idea what that might be. So that's one distinct group of clients I work with. Another, I work with people, you know, that are coming out of an addiction as well. And, you know, I've worked in the addiction recovery field for many years, and my perspective on addiction is that quite often there's a spiritual component. And what I mean to that is there's a yearning for connection. And it's sought often through an addictive behavior, and we find that, you know, it's like we have our umbilical cord in our hand trying to plug it into something to get fed, and we have no idea that it needs to come from our own beingness, our own source. So I work with clients in that way, that once they've moved past, or once they let go of the addiction, now what? How do we find a way to connect with our own nature? How do we get the forgiveness we need, forgiveness of others, forgiveness of self? How do we move beyond that collection of stories so that we can return to our essential nature. So those are two distinct clients that come to mind that I work a lot with.
So if a client were to work with you, what changes, what differences does your coaching bring to light in their life just in general? I mean, there's no rigidness because everybody's different, but what kinds of changes could a client be looking for or experience by working with you?
I guess simply said, I would say the ability to move from a mind-centered way of being to a heart-centered or a beingness way of being in the world. So we could say they would open their heart to a new way of being. I could say, you know, less stress, less worry, less belief in those old stories or those old ideas they have about themselves. But simply said, I would say more connection, more love, more knowing this relationship with their essential nature, the ability to embody not just a concept that we are whole and perfect, but an actual embodiment of that, where we can, you know, I love what Lily Tomlin says. She said, the problem with winning the rat race is you're still a rat. So move beyond the rat race, recognizing we're not a rat, that we are whole and perfect, and that we have the ability to live a life that is filled with more joy, more love, more compassion, and connection.
Those are very powerful words. I mean, you're talking about love, joy, and compassion, and we've talked about clarity. I mean, having clarity in your life. How do you know if you're fulfilling your potential if you're not clear about that? And a sense of calm and peace, too. I mean, these are very powerful concepts in a person's life.
Yes, indeed. And you know, one thing that comes to mind is a lot of times, even the word coach, you know, a lot of times people will come to me and they want to manifest their perfect life. So it's all about, I want to get this, I want to get that, I want to attain that, I want to find the perfect partner or the perfect job. And we don't recognize that that's not going to bring us what we're really looking for. So what I start with is exploring, what is it I believe that job will bring me? What is it I believe that partner will bring me? And inevitably, Les, it comes down to those key words, right? I'm going to feel connection. I'm going to feel loved. I'm going to feel whole and perfect. Now, we may not be able to articulate it in that way, but that's the first thing I do with clients that come in that way. And then we embark on a path of what needs to be explored. You know, we have to spend some time looking at self-love, at self-forgiveness, at forgiveness of others, so that we can let go of all those, that barrier we've built to experiencing this connection. Because it's not going to come from, imagine if we think we're going to find a partner and then suddenly we're going to feel loved and loving. And actually, it's quite the opposite. The more I understand myself to be loved, the more self-love I have, the more self-forgiveness I have, the more I want to share that with a partner. And that's a very different dynamic because I'm not looking to someone or something else to do my inner work.
Well, it's clear to me in this conversation that you, TJ, you are embodying these concepts spot on. I can feel the compassion of your heart. I can feel the sincerity of, I mean, your languaging is not corralling your clients in any way. You're extremely open to who they are as a person, and you're not projecting anything on them. You have a very clean and sincere platform here, and I suggest to you it's through the compassion of your heart, which is palatable, that and your heart is open to this thing called human consciousness. I would suggest human consciousness is the most powerful substance on the planet. I celebrate how powerful you are to be in that unyielding compassion for humanity. And I thank you for the work you do every single day.
Well, thank you, Les. You know, through my own journey, I came to the knowing that not only am I whole and perfect, but so is everybody else. And when I really saw that, and I really saw that what happens is we're all struggling with knowing that, and
sure,
that's really the greatest gift we have to offer, is being a presence for someone experiencing themselves as they really are.
Well, very nice. Well, an hour can go by pretty fast, and we've come to the end of this one. Take one more moment and remind us how we can get in touch with you and get your book.
No, thank you. So you can reach me on my website, tjwoodward.com. My book, actually, this month in September, I'm offering a complimentary 50-minute session to anyone who buys my book this month, and you can do that by going to consciousbeingbook.com.
Well, very nice. TJ, it's been a pleasure having you on the show, and thank you for sharing your journey with us.
Thank you, and thank you, Les, for the great work you're doing in the world as well.
Thanks. TJ Woodward is the author of Conscious Being, Awakening to Your True Nature, and if you've listened to this episode at all, you can really hear how he really walks his talk. He's got a very authentic way to him, and I encourage you to check out his material. It's always to your benefit to show up for yourself. And by listening to this episode tonight, you took the time, you took the intention, and followed the inspiration that made you listen to the show. You know, that well of unconditional love that's within each one of us can guide us through the journey of reawakening to the truth of who we are. And when you get that impulse, that inspiration to listen to a show, to get a book, to attend a seminar or whatnot, that's your own self-love showing up in your own thoughts. And when you follow that up with action, which you did tonight by listening to this episode, you're honoring the truth of who you are. You're honoring your potential. You're honoring your own personal awakening. And that always reflects in a positive way into your own future. So you've taken a step tonight to help shape your future into a more loving, forgiving, and compassionate journey for yourself. And, you know, when we can embody self-love, we become the vehicle of love itself. Love has no condition. Love has no expectation. It has no requirements. The very nature of unconditional love is just that, without condition. And the more you embody your own self-love, the more you become a vehicle of change in the sea of humanity. By raising your own consciousness, you make it easier for other people in the collective consciousness to do just this, the very same thing. And you've done that tonight, and I celebrate this time we spent together, and I celebrate your journey. Thanks for showing up for yourself. Thanks for caring about taking action on the choices that make you who you are today. My passion is helping people understand the nature of their own personal power. We're all powerful beings. Every one of us is a soul incarnate, and our soul has no notion of fear, no notion of limitations. And when we can understand that fundamental truth of who we are, our life expands, and that always feels good. And when we honor our potential with action, with a sense of intention, we're literally sculpting the future of who we are. I'm your host, Les Jensen, and I thank you for joining us on the show tonight. Until next time.
This has been a New Human Living radio broadcast. You can raise your own personal power with Personal Power Fundamentals Home Study Course at newhumanliving.com. Thanks for listening.